Hello, everyone. I'm Drew.
I'm Bailey.
I'm Lacey.
And we're sarcastic, so let's get sinister. Have you seen the TikToks where they do like the hair facials?
No. No.
Really want to go to one.
Me too. Like, you're lucky
Oh
'cause
wait, is it like a spa experience kind of, but they're like washing your hair
they
and it's
always
like
have
really
like a U-shaped
soothing.
water thing.
Yes,
Yeah.
okay.
But they also
Yeah.
like they do like a deep cleaning of your like scalp and everything.
And then
I would
they like
love
put
that.
something on your face too.
And like do a massage. I really want to do those because when I get my hair done, which I did last week, whenever I'm at the shampoo bowl, my stylist will like massage like my temples, my scalp, and it feels so good. Honestly, I would pay her just to do that for like 30 minutes.
Yeah. I
Was taking a
love getting my hair washed.
I was taking this. This might be sad and bum you guys out a little bit, but I was taking a patient from the hospital to a hospice home,
Oh,
whatever the
great.
name's called. And we moved her over into the bed. And then the nurse was like, she like took her hands and she was like holding her hands. And she was like, we're gonna get you situated. We're gonna get you into some nice, comfortable clothing. And then you can just relax and watch TV and just rest, okay? We'll take care of you here. And as I was leaving, I was like, how do I sign up for that? Can someone just put me in bed?
Tell me to watch TV and relax.
Yeah, get me dressed in something comfy.
That feels like a controversial statement to me.
Lacey, I'm allowed to be jealous of them.
It's because Lacey's not in healthcare or anything tied to healthcare.
She has been sitting on her butt for at least 2 months.
I mean, I do know that hospice means you're dying. Like, I do
No,
have that level of.
but Lacey, I mean, like, there's a thing called dark humor that
Oh,
we
yeah.
use constantly because if
Oh,
we
no, I've been
don't
around you a lot.
laugh, we're just gonna cry.
Yeah,
Yeah.
also, that's not what that was. I'm genuinely, I want to be put in bed.
Next
I'm
time we hang out, I
drinking.
will tuck you in.
You know what everybody says to me?
You one of the three kids,
I know,
though.
but you know what everybody says to me when I tell them that I have three little kids and they ask me the ages and then they go, "Oh, you're busy." Yes, I'm always fucking busy. Someone put me in bed and let me watch TV.
I feel like at that point, like I understand asking the ages, but like the "you're busy" comment will be now until they are moved out of your house. Like that comment just applies, I think, if you have three. Even if you were like, "Oh, they're 12, 10, and 8," like, "Oh, you're busy" is still a thing.
I would like to say, though, that if I had three of my oldest, I would be less busy.
Yeah.
She's pretty independent.
I went with my mom somewhere today and we had the baby. And this guy was asking about her stuff, and he said, "Is she good?" And I was like, "Yeah, we've been very lucky with her. She's a really good baby." And he was like, "Yeah, our first was like that. She made us think that we were ready for another one. And then we had him, and he ruined children for us.
Yep, that's what they
We were
do.
gonna have three, and we stopped at two." And I was like, "Yeah, I do think sometimes she's trying to lull us into it."
Yeah. Lacey, I keep having
That
kids.
after she just screamed for 3 hours because that's her nightly routine. But she's asleep now, so I feel good again.
I keep having kids for the maternity leave. I just want 12 weeks to sit.
Is it really relaxing though if you already have the other kids during those weeks?
It sounds to me like it would be exhausting.
Well, if they go to the daycare, then I don't have the kids then. So.
I talked to another lady who asked if she was our first, and I said yes. And she asked if we want more, and I said yeah. And she said, "I had one, and when she was about five, I had twins." And I said, "Oh no," because that's where how I feel about twins now. And she said, "I wanted to die." She said just like that. And I was like, "Yeah, my whole life I've wanted twins, my whole life. And now that I have just the one, I am so grateful she was just one, and I'm no longer interested in two at a time."
Yeah, I don't know. Oh God, I really think that if you're gonna have twins, the first pregnancy should be twins.
Should be the twins.
Because then one for mom, one for dad, everybody's taken care of. But if you've already...
don't know what you're getting into either.
Yeah.
You have another kid to take care of.
You don't know what you're getting into at that point yet. Yeah. I did want to actually, I did have something that I wanted to talk to you guys about.
Tell us.
Now, I know that we had spoken before about how you're not following the Karen Reed trial.
Mm-hmm. Because you're getting the updates we need.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of just waiting to see what happens and then I'll give you like a bigger update. But I just got to tell you this one. So the defense called Officer Dever, whatever. And she is so pissy the entire time. The defense was like, I'm going to pretend I'm talking to one of you guys and I'll tell you how you would respond if you were her. I'm just going to say, do either of you care if I say your last name? Good. I'm going to say Cardona because yours is hyphenated, Bailey. So, Officer Cardoni, do you remember what happened last weekend? And you would say, like, you can't remember how to say my name? I don't remember. And the judge, who is pretty... I don't want to say shitty towards the defense, but it's clear that she's got a... She is giving the impression that she likes the prosecution more than the defense.
It's a safe way to afford all that.
Yeah. She told the officer, she's like, no more comments. Just ask the question. She's like so pissy the whole time. But she was just like, oh, she said that before she testified, the commissioner, she's been an officer at the, so she originally worked for Canton PD, which is where John O'Keefe died and where the, somebody worked for Canton. I think John worked for Boston and I think the house who... the lawn that he was on, they worked for Canton. Anyway, she worked for Canton and then she transferred to Boston. And the commissioner of the Boston PD or whatever called her into his office and basically said, you need to tell the truth. We support you. No matter what happens, we've got your back. Do the right thing. What do you think about that? We support you. Do the right thing.
I mean, up until the do the right thing, it seems like tell the truth, whatever, like whatever happens, happens. But like the do the right thing feels like it comes with like a look, like
yeah. Like we'll know that you'll do the right thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's clearly
do what we would like you to do, and there will be no repercussions for you, is how that reads.
And she actually said on stand, she was like, for lack of a better word, how I perform on the stand will dictate my career. And I think that you could interpret that being like, if I lie on stand, that's perjury and I'll lose my job.
Yeah, isn't that coercion of, like, a witness or something?
Or...
But it's such a safe way to say it that they could be like, we didn't say anything. We just wanted them to do the right thing.
But what I'm saying is when she said, she was like, she's like, how I do today will dictate my job. My job. And so you could argue that being an officer, if she lies on stand, that's perjury and she'll lose her job. Or the other side of that is... You could argue that if she doesn't back up her fellow officers, she might lose her job. It's all very interesting. Um, I thought that you might find this interesting. This is one of the things that I wanted to talk to you guys right away, but I had to wait. A 6-year-old boy was found dead in his Florida home during a welfare check after he didn't show up to school for over 2 weeks. His mother told detectives he died while she was trying to, quote, exorcise demons out of her son's body. She believed she was being told by God to basically exorcise demons, and when the child had stopped moving, she felt that the child had been released of those demons and was wait and she had been waiting there for him to come back to life.
What did she do to him?
It's not immediately clear how the boy died, but investigators believe the homicide occurred on May 18th. And they discovered his body, like, the beginning of this week.
What excuses was she giving the school for him to be out of school for 2 weeks?
Well, the school is the one who called the police and asked for a welfare check.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
They did?
But you can literally just call in and be like, oh, they're sick today. And, like, after a certain number of days, you're supposed to, like, provide a doctor's note or whatever. But, yeah. Like, it takes a while of you being out, even if the parents are, like, calling in or not calling in, for like the officials to follow up and do anything. Like, I'm surprised that it was only 2 weeks before they called for a welfare check.
Yeah, I also would like to say,
if you had concerns already.
I would like to say though that if she believed her son was possessed, I'm not entirely sure that she would follow the right. Yeah. She would care to follow the right path to get.
Sounds a wee schizophrenic.
Yeah,
just a little.
It is hard to get them to chase anybody down for, like, truancy stuff. So I wonder if the school already had concerns about mom for them to call after just 2 weeks. Or, I guess, to his age. You know, like, if it was a high schooler, maybe they would have waited a little bit longer.
Yeah. But that's Lacey's input.
Teacher.
We had the same thought. Lacey doesn't usually get to, like, whip out her bag of expertise.
No.
You guys have stuff that's more applicable to her.
She sure doesn't do it when we say words wrong.
No, she.
You know, I'm supportive.
She says, I don't know, so often.
I am also honest. And there are things I don't know.
And then I just wanted to make this public service announcement. I know that you guys already know, but Grant Hardin, 56, escaped from Calico Rock Prison in Arkansas on May 25th. He was dressed in a fake law enforcement uniform. Prior to his arrest and imprisonment, Hardin was a former police chief who was serving decades in prison for murder and rape. The FBI is offering a reward of up to $20,000 for information leading to Hardin's arrest, in addition to the $5,000 offered by the U.S. Marshals. As far as I know, they have not found, like, the uniform discarded, so they believe that he is still wearing it.
Okay.
They believe that he has likely fled Arkansas. So, keep an eye out. He is bald and is giving off...
Here's another public service announcement. Don't get a kitten.
That's
the wrong message to tell the people. Maybe don't get that kitten.
Don't get a boy. I didn't miss the chewing on cord phase, the chewing on everything, the nibbling on me.
Yeah, he says, shut up, mom. I'm going to bite you.
Yeah. Don't tell people about me. That's what he said. That's a mafia cat. Look at him. Oh, he's so pretty. Hey, buddy. Can you see me? I'm going to slow blink at him. Wait.
He's not looking.
Is he looking?
No, he doesn't give a shit.
No, he's looking.
Okay. We're getting really close right now.
He's not doing it back to you.
Oh, well, you know.
His little bitty paws can swipe on my TikTok feed. he can also pause videos on my phone, which is really frustrating. because I'll just be scrolling and I'll attack my phone. Can you cease and desist?
Yes.
Yes.
Like, top voice.
It's like when you were saying, like, oh, the first one's great, and then you get a second one thinking the first one, the second one's going to be just as great. Yeah.
They're basically babies with claws.
And teeth.
My youngest started biting again.
Speaking of babies with teeth.
Oh, no.
Okay. All right, are we ready to get into it?
Yeah, tell us.
All right, let me just get my pictures ready. So I'm just going to preface this by saying that this is a different kind of case, different than what we usually talk about. Do you recall what I told you about the girl that survived, like, a boat thing?
Yes. Her whole family died, right? But she made it.
Yeah. This is similar to that. So
it's a survival story?
Yes.
I do like
there's
those.
An interesting twist.
Oh, no.
Okay.
All right. So in August 2013... Amber Smith was a 20-year-old single mother living in Fort Collins, Colorado. At the time, she was working at a 7-Eleven to support herself and her 3-year-old son, Gabriel. She was kind, quiet, and devoted to her son. On the evening of Friday, August 30th, 2013, Amber was off work. Her best friend was babysitting for her, so she and a friend, Eric Vanagunas, went to Rossboro Park to hang out and drink vodka. After consuming too much alcohol, oh, here's a picture of Gabriel.
Hang out and drink vodka is a wild.
Yeah.
Well, she was 20, so, like, what are you going to do?
Oh.
Choose something better than vodka.
Well.
She's a cutie.
Her best friend was babysitting, so she was hanging out with Eric. That's Eric.
You say he's different?
Yeah, well, it was immediately after I said he's a cutie at the picture of her kid. It switched to this picture, and I didn't have the same
feeling
at all. Mm. Yeah.
Got it.
After consuming too much alcohol, Amber fell asleep on the picnic table. When she awoke later, she was bound with duct tape, and a man was on top of her. She knew she was in danger, so she started to scream through the tape as loud as she could, and she struggled against the bindings, trying to break free. Amber couldn't see the man's face, but after she started struggling, he put a rope around her neck and tightened it until Amber again lost consciousness. Before completely losing consciousness, Amber remembered thinking about Gabriel. She told herself that she had to be strong for her baby. Dying was not an option. At 4 a.m., Amber again regained consciousness. She was still bound with duct tape, but she was now naked, bleeding, and at a different park. She'd initially been attacked at Rossboro Park, but woke up about 2 miles away in Cottonwood Glen Park. She screamed for help, and the police started receiving multiple calls about screaming from the park.
Oh, so people were actually
calling
for help when they heard somebody in distress.
Yeah, it was not the bystander effect.
Yeah, that's a nice change.
Yeah. Officer Dane Stratton, who had been on the job for about 2 months, was the first to arrive on scene. He pulled into the park and could hear Amber screaming. He started driving through, searching with his spotlight for the source of the screams. Then, as he was turning his car around, his headlights landed on Amber. She was sitting on the ground on a service road, still naked, still bound, and her face was red with blood. Officer Stratton jumped out of his car and called for paramedics. He approached Amber and found that she was only wearing one sock. Her hands were completely covered in red duct tape. The red on her face was not actually blood. It was duct tape. Her hair was matted across her face, and her eyes were covered with the tape. So the tape was just on her eyes, not on her mouth.
Okay.
As paramedics and other officers arrived, they covered Amber with a blanket and began cutting the duct tape. Amber was cold, terrified, in excruciating pain, but she looked up at Officer Stratton and said, "I'm Amber, Amber Smith." The duct tape was bagged for evidence, and Amber was quickly taken to a hospital in critical condition. They're removing the tape in that picture. There's the tape. In the ambulance, Stratton tried to get more information. He was concerned that Amber wasn't going to recover, so he wanted to try and get any information from her that he could while he could. Unfortunately, at that time, Amber was still pretty panicked and just said, "I don't know," while crying. Stratton comforted her until they got to the hospital. Doctors worked to stabilize her many injuries. She had suffered a broken jaw, many facial fractures, rib fractures, extensive bruising to her body, including an eye that was almost swollen shut, ligature marks on her neck, and a brain hemorrhage. Detective Siobhan Seymour met Amber in the emergency room. Despite her injuries, Amber remained conscious, alert, and oriented. Although difficult due to her broken jaw, she was able to communicate with the detective. She was able to tell Seymour that she'd been at Rossboro Park with her friend, Eric Vanagunas, earlier that evening, though her memory of the attack was hazy. She was transferred to the ICU, where the medical team spent several days working to stabilize her condition, manage her brain injury, and ensure she could breathe on her own. A few hours after the attack, Detective Seymour and her partners tracked down. I can't talk tonight. Let me take a sip.
It's been a while.
A few hours after the attack, Detective Seymour and her partners tracked down Amber's sister-in-law and best friend, Kirsty Aguilar. Amber and Kirsty met while Amber was dating Kirsty's brother-in-law, and the two became close when Amber became pregnant with Gabriel. They called to notify Kirsty about what happened. She rushed to the hospital but wasn't taken to Amber Smith's room. She'd been put under an alias due to the fact that her attacker was still at large. Kirsty walked into the room and didn't recognize Amber. Her face was so badly beaten and swollen.
Oh, God.
Sorry.
Wow, yeah, he really beat her up.
The forensics team performed a sex assault exam on Amber. She was processed forensically for DNA. Her hands were processed, her face, her neck. Any area that they believed the suspect may have come in contact with was examined. They found semen and possibly some touch DNA. The forensics team then swabbed every inch of the red duct tape. Investigators believed that the attacker must have known Amber. Why would someone just attack somebody and brutalize them in such a degree if you didn't know them or have a grudge against them? Meanwhile, Detective Seymour and her partner went to the home of Eric Vanagunas. His mother said he wasn't home and sent the detectives to their church where Eric volunteers. And that's where they found him. At the time, he had found out that something had happened to Amber, but he was still seemingly surprised that the police wanted to question him, which... You were the last one with her, man.
Dummy.
Why me? You literally just got drunk with her, sir. What do you mean?
So, I feel like you guys are going to really like this.
I'm ready.
He told Seymour that after Amber fell asleep, he was unable to wake her up. So, he just left her.
Oh, just drunkenly passed out on a park
bench. But... After a few minutes of driving around, he started to worry about her. So, he returned to the park to check on her, and she seemed fine. So he figured she'd be all right if he left her there. But he did let the detective know that he did not feel good about that.
With friends like Eric, who needs enemies? Am I right? Fucking weirdo.
Detective Seymour later told Keith Morrison on Dateline that she thought he was surprised that it had happened to Amber, and it certainly made him look like a very bad friend.
Just a bad friend. Yeah. A bad human being in general.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean?
You're, like, drinking with a friend, and let's say nothing happens to you, like what happened to her. Let's say you're at a park drinking with friends. Already, like, a risky decision, but whatever. And the next morning, you wake up on the park bench. And you text your friend, you're like, what happened? They're like, well, you just totally passed out. And I was like, you're fine.
I didn't want to disturb you. Yeah, I just
left you there.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Unconscious in public.
Yeah. I thought you guys would get a kick out of that. But don't worry, he didn't feel good about it. So,
well, good. You know, that's something.
Yeah. He does have a conscience.
At least he's feeling something.
Yeah. So after finding out all of that, Seymour inquired about the nature of Eric and Amber's relationship.
Of all the people to cut
he denied
out.
Any intimacy. So Seymour Ooh, did what the do whole we
do? It's still recording.
Like, so there'd no be no reason for your DNA to be found on Amber.
Just vamp?
I don't
that whole thing.
This is crazy.
And that's where we're going to end the episode. On a cliffhanger.
A cliffhanger. A 25-minute cliffhanger episode.
Don't worry, you'll hear part two.
Probably. And she's back. Everything's fine.
Welcome back to part two, everybody.
I don't know what is going on. Last week it was shitty too, wasn't it?
I think so. Was that last week? It was one time or another.
All right, so like what happened? Did I just disappear?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And we both went, oh.
We made it work though. So
we did. Everything's fine.
How long was I gone for?
Oh my god, 30 it's been hours. Oh,
you guys just stayed on for hours, Lazy. No, you know what? I'm gonna ignore Bailey. I'm gonna focus on you. Let's lean into this. What happened?
Well, you just passed out, and we felt like you were probably fine.
Yeah,
we'll check on her later. We wanted to chat. You're always here when we're talking.
We wanted privacy. We actually kicked you out.
We wanted some us time.
I'll leave.
We bonded.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that reminds me. When we're done, I need to show you a TikTok I found.
Yes,
it's so funny. Are you finally relaxing and going to sleep?
No.
Bailey got a new cat. Remember Marvin?
Kitten.
Stop it. She might bring him this weekend. So take Benadryl and we go.
Leo.
Oh, do you want to see?
Look at the pretty boy.
Bailey, say something so that you get big.
Oh, I see.
This is Marvin, my son. He's awful.
And we love him.
All right, so what was the last thing that you guys heard from me?
Honestly, I don't know. It's been
hours. I'm fully blanking on the whole story right now.
I'm just going to pick up where I left off with...
We were talking about how What's-His-Face didn't feel good about that he left her there.
Yeah. So,
and I think we're a minute or two past that.
The detective inquired about the nature of Eric and Amber's relationship. He denied any intimacy. So, Detective Seymour did the whole thing where you're like, so there'd be no reason for your DNA to be found on Amber. And Eric said, yeah, that's true. And he agreed to provide a DNA sample.
Okay.
So Detective Seymour took the DNA to the lab and then returned to check on Amber. Amber was more lucid now. It had been roughly 24 hours after her attack. She told the detective that she had been sitting on a picnic table with Eric, sharing a bottle of vodka and listening to music on Eric's phone. Then the next thing she knew, she was waking up on her stomach on a floor with her hands, feet, and mouth bound in duct tape. She was now indoors, but how she got there and where she was, she didn't know. She began screaming, even though her mouth was covered. The attacker started to strangle her with rope, but Amber continued to fight. She remembered that the attacker said something to her, something that Dateline would not air. So I don't know.
Interesting.
I think he probably said, like, fuck you, you stupid bitch, or something like that. Something littered with curse words and derogatory. It wasn't like something like National Treasure.
This was language they couldn't put on table.
Yeah, I don't think it was like the Declaration of Independence holds the key to treasure or something like that. I think I think it was something that they couldn't air from National Treasure.
You don't think that they could air that on the FCC if they that was real? Tell people shut the them
clues.
Down.
I don't think that they would, Bailey, because one, then they couldn't do it everybody themselves. Knows. Exactly. And two, anarchy. Everybody would be rushing the Capitol again. I don't actually know where the Declaration is currently.
It's at the National Archives in Washington, D.C.
Interesting. And that's the Capitol.
Is it?
Good job.
No.
Oh. Washington, D.C.
Well, yeah, the Capitol building is there, but the National Archives is a whole separate, like,
I meant, like, that's the capital of America.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what I meant, too.
Oh, okay. Guys, well, the baby's sleeping.
Page. My babies are sleeping, too. So, she remembered, anyway, okay, it's not sleeping, and you're going to startle him awake again. So Dateline wouldn't air what he said, but the attacker said something to her, and she continued to scream. So the attacker punched her in the face, which is what broke her jaw. She told the detective that she didn't see the man's face and didn't recognize his voice before she lost consciousness again. Investigators searched both parks for any evidence related to the assault. At Rossboro Park, no significant physical evidence was found. At Cottonwood Glen Park, however, investigators found Amber's clothes and belongings scattered around an area of disturbed grass and broken branches, indicating a struggle. The duct tape used to bind Amber was found and tested. Skin cells were found and matched the DNA collected from Amber's body. So that indicated to the investigators that there was only one attacker.
Okay.
Because they only found one set of DNA on everything. So, Amber, after 4 days, was released from the hospital. She was taken to a police safe house. She was still terrified. Her attacker could be anywhere, anyone. She was mainly concerned that the attacker would come back to finish the job. And it didn't help that the police put her in the hospital under an alias and then took her to a safe house. Like, that to her meant that she was actually still in danger.
A fair assumption.
Mm-hmm. Due to the violent nature of the attack, investigators believe the assailant must have struck before, so they ran the DNA through CODIS. Unfortunately, nearly a week later, results from CODIS showed no matches were found, not to convicted felons and not to other unidentified DNA. So, also, additionally, the DNA did not match Eric's DNA, thereby ruling him out as a suspect. So Eric is
just a shitty friend.
Bad friend, not attacking and raping unconscious women in parks.
I mean, that's, you know, it's a win. It is a win.
Yes.
But hopefully they're not friends.
You could say he's a shitty friend, but at least he didn't attack her.
Yeah.
Yeah. So everyone was shocked by the fact that the DNA didn't match.
Eric.
No, the DNA didn't match anybody. Like, everyone thought that this could not have been the first attack.
Gotcha.
Detective Seymour remembers feeling sick to her stomach. Officer Dane Stratton said it felt like a kick in the gut. He was so sure that this must have been a repeat offender. Quote, if this is his opening act, where's he going to go from here? Amber found it hard to leave her house. She became depressed and blamed herself for the attack. Police continued investigating, interviewing other men in Amber's circle. Each one submitted their DNA. Each sample resulted in no match. The months went by and the case got colder and colder. Detective Seymour was just waiting for another attack. Police became desperate. The patrol officers knew the attacker had used red duct tape, so if they stopped a car with a strange guy in it and he had red duct tape, they took his swabs and collected the tape. They were just trying anything they could. Meanwhile, Amber tried to heal. She tried to move on and forget about the attack. The first year, Amber really struggled. She couldn't see a man without worrying that he was the one who attacked her. Then in 2015, Amber was invited to move in with a few friends. She still suffered from PTSD and other long-term effects of her injuries, including migraines, insomnia, and anxiety. But they'd be in a good neighborhood, and she wouldn't be alone in the house anymore. She'd have many roommates, and Amber felt safe there. The roommates consisted of mostly men, which is weird, considering that she's, like, suspicious of all men. But
yeah.
I think that because... One of them is one of her, like, one of her friends' buddies. So she's like, oh, they're not strangers. Yeah. So, I don't know all of them, but I know, Bryce Bailey is her friend's buddy. And Bryce's childhood friend, Stefan Moon, crashed on the couch. And then there were others too. Amber became fast friends with them. Gradually, they and the other housemates helped Amber learn to smile again. But Stefan, aka Sam, in particular, turned out to be really supportive. He was smart, gentle, and a good listener. Oh. What?
Did you say, oh no?
We've been doing this a while. I'm suspicious.
Were you suspicious of Eric?
I was, and he turned out to be just a bad friend, so maybe Stefan's just a good friend.
Lacey's just being...
we've been watching M. Night Shyamalan movies.
Oh, okay. Amber talked to him about her attack, and he was a shoulder to cry on for her. Maybe it's a love story.
That would be nice for her. I want a happy ending for Amber.
Amber was starting to be herself again. She focused on raising her son, and began to accept reluctantly that her case would probably never be solved. She blocked it out, and she moved on with her life. Unlike Amber, Detective Seymour was not ready to move on, and she was not ready to accept defeat. She was still chasing anything she could think of, and she kept an eye on the news from out of state. For example, there was some guy in Virginia who had used duct tape at one time, at one point in time, and one of his murders, but DNA ruled him out. Every time there was a violent sexual assault in town, Seymour was certain it was the guy, until it wasn't. Finally, she was forced to turn her attention to new crimes. But Officer Dane Stratton was still haunted by the image of Amber all bound in duct tape on the ground. Like Amber, he too suffered from PTSD. He had difficulty sleeping due to, like, whenever he would close his eyes, he would just, like, picture her and just hear her screams. And he would have trouble sleeping because of that. Even though it was never officially his case, Stratton would patrol parks in his squad car, just keeping an eye out for anything suspicious. When he wasn't doing that, he'd offer to drive visibly drunk college students home from bars to prevent another attack. Yeah. Everyone was just trying to continue on, and the best that they could. The end.
Okay.
Until Bryce
Bailey at us.
Bryce Bailey called the police. In 2017. Hi. So 4 years later,
I was gonna ask which year the attack was.
2013. Now we're in 2017.
Okay.
Bryce called the police to report his bike had been stolen. Police investigated the theft, and luckily, they found the bike. It was at a pawn shop. The pawnbroker was more than willing to cooperate and provided the police with a full description of the thief. Now, this is relevant because in the state of Colorado, it's a felony to lie or provide false information to a pawnbroker. Just so you guys know. So this wasn't just like a quick bike theft type thing. It's a felony. So they were able to track down the thief. He was arrested, booked, and swabbed. As I'm sure you both know, those arrested for felonies have to provide a DNA sample. I don't like what you're doing, Lacey.
Tell us who it was.
No. So
I guess. Stefan.
Detective Seymour was out for a hike with her sons when she received a text from her boss. Seymour was told to call the lab at the Colorado Bureau of Investigation because there's an update for the duct tape case. Seymour quickly called the CBI and was informed that they'd gotten a CODIS hit. The bike thief was a match for the DNA collected from Amber.
Oh?
That DNA profile belongs to one in every 10 quintillion.
Oh my god.
What's a quintillion?
That's a 10 and then 18 zeros.
I just want to say, when you said it was a match to the DNA collected from Amber, my brain scrambled that and heard that it was a match to Amber's DNA. And I was like, she faked the whole thing. That was a twist I was not ready for.
Yeah, right, go ahead. She got her own semen on herself.
Yeah, and punched her own face black and blue.
Yeah. And raped herself.
It wasn't a reasonable reaction. It was just...
You're very excited. I like that. So, one in every 10 quintillion. That's 10 with 18 zeros.
That just feels too like many. A fake number.
Yeah, like a fake number.
Yeah, I think it is a fake number, but it means that this is a match.
It's like when you say in a zillion.
Yes. So, Seymour. You said zillion, and like the Z got stuck in my face. Seymour, out of curiosity, searched the name on Facebook to see what this attacker looked like. She was surprised with what she saw, to say the least. It was not...
What did she say, Drew?
Well, it was not what she was expecting. What do you think?
He looks like he's 18.
Just some young kid in his Poconos sweatshirt.
It says Broncos, you dummy.
In his Broncos sweatshirt.
It has the Bronco label on it.
I was looking at the word. Yeah, never mind. I'm looking at it again, and that's not Poconos.
What is happening?
Not even like the letters in the right order.
Anyway. You can't speak. Lacey can't read. What the fuck?
She contacted Dane Stratton first and told him that they'd found a match, finally. Then she called Amber. Seymour asked if she could tell Amber the update in person, so Amber invited her to her new home, an apartment which she shared with only Gabriel. So she was doing pretty good.
Okay.
As soon as Amber opened the door, Detective Seymour couldn't wait. After 4 years of bad news, she could barely contain herself. She told her the news. They'd found a match. Amber was elated. Then Seymour pulled out the picture of the man. When Amber saw the picture, her excitement turned to confusion. She told Detective Seymour that there must have been a mistake because this was wrong. She told the detective, there's no way this is the wrong guy. The picture Detective Seymour was holding was that of Stefan Moon.
That's a rich.
The man Amber cried to, confided in, and lived with. The DNA results matched him. Do you have a question?
Men are awful.
The whole thing, I'm not saying that like the actual attack wasn't an awful thing to do, but this... Then, like, befriending her afterwards and being her shoulder to cry, she's never going to trust anybody again. Like, that would really fuck you up emotionally afterwards.
Amber told Seymour that she knew him. I think, so, when she said that, I think Seymour was like, well, we thought that the attacker would have known you. Like, that's what we thought. But Amber was like, no. I didn't meet him until after I was attacked. 2 years after.
Was he, like, stalking her and just, like, inserting himself in her life afterwards?
Wasn't he, like, a friend of a friend?
Yeah.
You're probably going to tell us.
Well, I don't think I actually get into it, but I'm pretty sure that it was just a weird coincidence.
Yeah, Jesus.
Yeah. So
I don't like that.
No. Not nice. Amber could not believe it. This man was sensitive, kind, and so nice to her son, which I hate.
Yeah.
So in an effort to get more proof for the police, while also like proving it to herself, Amber and Seymour concocted a little plan. Amber was going to call Sam, which I don't know. I start calling him Sam at this point. He goes by Sam. His name is Stefan, but he goes by Sam.
Okay.
She was going to call Sam on a recorded line and confront him. Amber dreaded making the call because either way it sucked. If the DNA results were accurate, her friend, a man she described as harmless, had brutally attacked and raped her. If the DNA results were wrong, her attacker was still at large and no closer to being found. So the following day, Amber made the call. The two hadn't talked in a while, so they began with some pleasantries before Amber dove in.
So, remember how I told you about, like, that stuff that happened to me in 2013 about that guy that broke my jaw and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the police contacted me and said, your DNA matched up.
What? Oh my god, Amber, I don't know what to say. I did not hurt you.
Okay, but they have your DNA. So how do you explain that?
What the f-?
Yeah, from the 2013 incident, the one I told you about, the one I broke down to you and told you about multiple times.
Yeah, Amber, I remember you talking about that. That's sick. Amber. I'm gonna stop you right there. I did not hurt you. I don't know how this is happening.
You don't know. It doesn't just come up in there, and I've never met you before 2015, so how the would your DNA be in my vagina, dude? How do you explain that?
I don't know, Amber. I don't know. No, Amber, stop. I didn't hurt you.
And then, at the end of the call, it's like a light bulb went on in his head.
It was you. Roxborough Park, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we had sex. I didn't hurt you. We had sex.
We had sex at Roxborough Park.
You were giving out free... Yeah, you were the girl.
Wow.
We had sex. I did not hurt you. Conversation is done. I didn't hurt you. I'm sorry. I didn't hurt you.
What an asshole.
Why?
He's such an asshole.
Yeah, so Sam said that he and Amber had sex at Roxborough Park. He said that she was, the thing that got bleeped out, he said she was giving out free pussy. He insisted that he'd responded to an ad on Craigslist and that they'd had consensual sex.
So, I understand. I understand that he was panicking because she said they had his DNA and he probably was like, I need a story.
Mm-hmm.
But now he has to be able to explain why when he met her in the future and she told him she'd been brutalized that night at the park, he never said like, well, do you remember when you and I hooked up because you put an ad in Craigslist and you were giving out free pussy?
I think that what he was going for was that hookup was super anonymous. Like, he didn't even know her. Like, he didn't know that it was her. And because she was brutalized, he didn't brutalize her.
No,
because they just had to... Exactly. So, he didn't put two and two together because that's not what he did. You understand, Lacey? It all makes perfect sense.
Great.
Sounds good to me.
Sorry.
So, Detective Seymour, like you, did not believe him.
Good.
She had been listening in during the conversation and could tell that at first, Sam seemed to be caught off guard. But as the call continued, he was trying to figure out a plausible story that could explain the DNA on Amber. I also think it's worth pointing out that Amber mentioned that the DNA was found in her vagina. So as far as Sam knows, that's the only place that they found DNA. Worth keeping in mind. Surprisingly, Sam was arrested soon after that phone call, which I don't quite understand because he had a
great
Yeah. Story. He was brought to the police station.
Their bases. They have to at least question him and make sure. Oh, he looks so distraught.
He was brought to the police station to be interrogated, and in the room, Sam began to cry like a big baby.
Well, all he did was respond to an ad on Craigslist for some free pussy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that you would really like Detective Seymour, because she just like sat there and watched him. So like she didn't comfort him. She just was like, you know, you're being a baby. At first, she actually doubted the DNA results too for a second, because she was like, this guy is the guy that did it. Like, look at him. Mm. But then, like, she knew better. Like, the DNA was 1 in 10 quintillion. So, the interrogation began. Sam continued to deny raping Amber. He said that he just separated from his wife the summer of 2013. He was feeling really down, so he was just perusing Craigslist. And he decided to respond to an ad offering sexual favors in the park. He said he had sex with a girl, but he didn't see her face. Sam told Detective Seymour that after the sex, he went home and told his roommate, Bryce Bailey, about the girl in the park offering free sex. According to Sam, Bryce left the residence, but returned after an hour or two with someone. Sam could hear the two talking. It was Bryce and a female voice. He assumed Bryce had brought the girl home, but then screaming and yelling started. So Sam, being the brave little bunny he is, hid in his room until the screaming stopped. He he told the detective that he thought Bryce had killed the girl, so he looked under his door. He said he saw Bryce carrying the girl out of the house over his shoulder. Her head was covered in red. It was all just so bloody.
So not just coming up with a shitty story to absolve himself from guilt, throwing a friend under the bus.
Yes, it's important to keep in mind that while telling the detective this, he is blubbering like a big old baby. I want you to kind of just, that was like his face the entire time.
Why didn't he call the police if he saw his friend?
He's a scared little bunny.
Excellent question, Bailey. Thank you. After that, the next day, Sam asked Bryce, did you have fun with somebody last night? Bryce beat the shit out of him, then told Sam that he had killed her, and Sam was next if he says anything.
A reasonable response. Just beat the shit out of him. If only.
When he finally was done with all of that nonsense, Detective Seymour told him in a very calm and gentle tone, some of that stuff isn't making sense to her. Mm. Sam responded, yes, ma'am, none of this stuff makes sense to me.
Oh.
Okay.
Detective Seymour elaborated what exactly didn't make sense to her. Sam's DNA wasn't just found in Amber's vagina. Amber's neck wounds, both of Amber's hands, and the duct tape all had Sam's DNA on him. Sam acted so confused and was like, there was semen all over her? I don't think he understood that touch DNA was a thing.
Yeah.
So the detective straight up said, you are the man who did this to her. She then pleaded with Sam to be a hero and help Amber finally heal by taking accountability for his actions. But Sam instead continued to blame his childhood friend. And just to remind you, this friend, he also stole his bike.
I forgot.
Yeah, just to remind you, this is the guy that stole his friend's bike.
And you know, it's wild that he ended up getting caught for this because he stole a fucking bike.
Yeah. Doing their due diligence, though, the detectives questioned Sam's parents and Bryce Bailey, as well as verifying Sam's alibis. Brian and Susie Moon came to the police station. These are Sam's parents. During their talk, the Moons told Detective Seymour that Sam was always a smart and kind kid. However, His mom said he's always been a kind of screw up, and his dad said he was famous for doing stupid things. Quote, the epitome of stupidity.
Oh. Yeah. Okay, Dad.
But he never did anything aggressive or violent. Susie, his mom, said that as a nurse, she made sure her son knew how to treat a woman, not to beat women, and that rape was bad, etc., etc.
Just some lessons.
Yeah. Detective Seymour told Bryce what Sam had accused him of. Bryce scoffed and said, that's ridiculous. He said he didn't know Amber in 2013. Seymour asked why Sam would say such ridiculous things about him. And Bryce offered up some possibilities. He said he's either scared or he's trying to get revenge. Since Bryce was the one who originally called the police and started this whole thing. So, obviously, blame that guy. Bryce was eager to provide his DNA as a way to exclude himself. And just before ending the interview with Detective Seymour, Bryce told her that one thing he knew about Sam after being friends with him for years, Sam is a constant liar. And then, so I mentioned that they checked on his alibis, and I was, at first I was like, what alibis? What they did was they went to Sam's home and they attempted to look under his bedroom door. Like any other fucking door, you couldn't see like anywhere higher than someone's ankles. So I don't know why he thought he could see Bryce carrying a woman out the door. But anyway, the investigators also got a search warrant to look at all the advertisements from 2013 from Craigslist. Because I guess Craigslist saves that stuff. And they looked for specific phrases that Sam had mentioned during his interview. I know that this is going to shock you guys, but they couldn't find the ad Sam claimed to have seen.
Shocked.
You look shocked.
That was my face.
So Sam was indicted and taken to trial. He was charged with second-degree kidnapping, first-degree assault causing bodily injury with a deadly weapon, attempted first-degree murder, and 2 counts of sexual assault with a weapon. The trial began nearly 6 years after Amber Smith had been attacked in August 2019. Detective Seymour and Officer Stratton both testified. Sam also testified in his own defense. He said the investigators just didn't look hard enough for the Craigslist ad.
Wow.
But even his attorney said that there was no evidence to support Amber posting an ad. However, the defense argued that Amber had been found in a puddle of fluid, which would cross-contaminate any samples found on her body. They were trying to argue that that's how Sam's DNA got all over her. Mm-hmm. The puddle of fluid. Which, I have a question. What? What puddle?
Don't worry about it.
So this was a plausible theory for like 2 seconds, because the prosecutors pointed out that there was DNA found on the inside of the tape, an area that was unexposed to any fluid. Also, wow. They pointed out that even if that were possible, there was no other DNA found on Amber. Literally none.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Finally, Amber took the stand. She told her story, and she did, by all accounts, phenomenally. She actually felt empowered after testifying. Then the jury went to deliberate. They took less than a day to come back with a verdict. The judge read out the first verdict, and many in the gallery audibly gasped.
Oh, no.
Amber looked at the jury and asked them why.
Oh, my God.
Detective Seymour was heartbroken. The jury had found Stefan Moon not guilty of attempted first-degree murder.
His fucking DNA. you have to, I forget sometimes that juries are just made up of like other people. And like, think about how many people are fucking stupid.
Then the judge read out the next verdict. On the charge of second degree kidnapping, the jury finds the defendant, Stefan Moon, guilty. On the charge of two counts of sexual assault with a weapon, the jury finds the defendant, Stefan Moon, guilty. On the charge of first-degree assault causing serious bodily injury with a deadly weapon, the jury finds the defendant, Stefan Moon, guilty. Does that make you feel better, Lazy?
I guess.
I think that they just had a hard time believing that he... Because first-degree murder is... Attempted first-degree murder is that he had premeditated... Like planned to
kill. Yeah. Okay, fine. It's fine.
You're gonna... Lacey...
There's still a lot of stupid people who end up in juries.
I know. Calm down, okay? I think you're gonna like it. Okay. Everyone was relieved. But without the attempted murder charge, would Sam do any real time? Months later, during the sentencing hearing, the judge sentenced Sam to the maximum for each charge. In total, Stefan Moon was sentenced to 128 years to life.
Oh, shit.
Amber okay. was finally relieved. He can't hurt anyone else, and he can't hurt her. This chapter in her life can finally close. It was also a nice ending for Dane Stratton. During the trial, Dane saw Amber in person for the first time since the night he found her in the park. He walked up to her and just wanted to talk because, keep in mind, whenever he thought of her, what was burned in his memory was her terrified screams. So yeah. He wanted to replace that with her real voice.
Oh.
Yeah. He's a good guy. I like him. But not everyone was pleased by the outcome. Stefan okay. Moon's parents were obviously mortified by what Sam had done, but they weren't totally convinced that he was the one who beat and bound Amber in duct tape. And they thought his sentence was outrageous.
Right.
Many convicted murderers get much less time and right. have the possibility of parole. Detective Seymour feels bad for them, but also feels strongly that it was just a matter of time before Sam struck again. After all, Seymour had found something going through Sam's phone, something that wasn't presented to the jury during trial. After his arrest, investigators looked through his phone and found hundreds of searches for rape and torture porn. These searches were all done years after Amber's assault. So it was something that he was still interested in.
I'm surprised he didn't do it again.
Yeah. So,
and by that I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he did it.
And he probably got to like live through it again when Amber was talking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that
So like he maybe didn't need to.
Need to, cuz he had like that access to her.
Yeah.
What I want to know is like, did he recognize her when she moved in? Or was it when she was, like, talking about what happened to her when he was like, oh, shit. Either way, it's icky.
Yeah.
So while Sam Moon rots in the Colorado Territorial Correctional Facility, Amber uses her experience to help people. She pursued a certification in addiction counseling, aiming to support individuals struggling with addiction and trauma. To fund this endeavor, a GoFundMe campaign was launched by Detective Seymour, raising over $5,500 to assist with tuition and transportation costs. Today, she works as an addiction counselor in Fort Collins, helping others navigate their challenges. Despite ongoing struggles with PTSD, anxiety, and migraines, she remains a devoted mother to her son and a symbol of resilience. She is not a victim. She is a survivor.
That was lovely.
Yes. I also just want to say that I feel like we've talked about a lot of cases where the man attacks someone and is like given a slap on the wrist and then just keeps doing it, gradually getting worse and worse. And so I'm just like really glad to finally have a case where he didn't get a slap on the wrist.
Actual punishment. Yeah. And like 120, we read cases where, well, I mean, that's what you just said. I was going to say where they rape a bunch of women and get like a couple years and then they're out and they get to do it again. 128 years for kidnapping and sexual assault is,
yeah,
feels a little unheard of. And it feels like we should hear about it more.
Yeah, I'm pro. I'm for it.
Keep doing that.
Mm-hmm. So that's cool. The story of Amber Smith.
Story.
And
I guess maybe not a good story, but like good ending.
Yeah. The story about how she ended up living with her attacker.
Yeah. I don't like that.
Any other comments? Questions? Concerns? Well, that was sinister.
We were sarcastic.
And we hope you keep listening.